Hi, I'm Connie Dover, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
It's Monday morning. My name is Keith Brown Eel. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. On today's edition, hosts Melvin Merritt and Jessica Thomas will talk with Moses Brings Plenty, a local Native American storyteller, actor, and musician. Moses will tell how Native Americans traditionally treated tribal members when they broke tribal laws, and a story or two as well. Have your pens and paper ready for our calendar of events in the middle of the show, and the 420 drug war news at the end of the show. Up next is Melvin, Jessica, and Moses.
In the studio with me is Mr. Mose Bring Plenty. He is a American Indian, and he will be sharing some things about that Indian, the Indian culture. And so at this time, I would like to take time and welcome Mr. Moses Bring Plenty.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Good to have you here this morning.
Tell us a little bit about what you do.
And I noticed the last time I talked with you, and you were out of town, and you was in the Sundance Film Festival. Tell us a little bit about that, and how did you get into that?
Well, I do a little bit of acting, and what got me involved was when I used to travel around and go to different schools, primarily on the reservations, I'll always ask Indian children, why aren't you proud of who you are and what you're created to be? And so a lot of our children, the number one answer was, well, we don't see ourselves on TV. I mean, my mission and my goal is not to be a big-time actor. But the opportunity presented itself, I took advantage of it to show the world that we as Indian people still exist and we're still here today.
Oh, that's awesome. So what are the other things that you're doing? And I noticed that you do some things in the community, and also that you are married as well. So what else is that you do?
Well, I'm employed by the Kansas City Indian Center at the right now, and what I do is again, just to try to let people know that there's an Indian center here in Kansas City. And I've also done some music. I've traveled around with, used to be the traditional drummer or percussionist for the Native contemporary group Brule. And then we started our own group for a little while. And right now, my main focus is about the preservation of our tradition.
You're full of talent. I know the last time when you came to the Penny Mill Foundation event, and I know that you can sing. So when did that start?
That started as a child. You know, when I was a kid growing up. See, I come from the Lakota Nation, the tribe. And as a child growing up, my grandparents, see, I didn't know I was Lakota. I always knew myself as an Indian. My grandparents always said, you know, speak Indian, sing Indian, pray Indian. Everything was always Indian. Mm-hmm. And so as we begin to progress, as I begin to mature, grow up, I start hearing the term Lakota. And now it went from Lakota to being Native American, which to me, as an individual, that's a derogatory term because our people are older than America. And plus, the Irish are the first ones to utilize that term, Native American. And not only that, but I understand the psychological warfare that has been persistent or put upon my people. And so none of the treaties are made with Native Americans. They're only made with the Indian people. Mm-hmm. And so I educate our people, or my people, with that understanding that we have to maintain our identity. And what helps us to maintain our identity is not skin color, length of hair. It has nothing to do with that. It has everything to do with our language and the way we pray. Because there is a natural law, and we all have that understanding as Indian people.
Moses, I've heard the term the ribs when referring to the Lakota or the Dakota tribes of the Midwest. Help me to understand, or our listeners to understand, how the tribes are broke down. Like you say, as of being Native American, as somewhat of a derogatory term.
Mm-hmm.
What is more appropriate? And help us to understand how the tribes function there. Like what I was saying, was referred to as the ribs. is a term that I've heard.
Well, you have many different bands. I mean, we never had these labels that we have plastered all over us today. Mm-hmm. You know, we were always simply just the people of the people. You know, and in that terminology, what it means is that, see, no human being is born with language. Not even the greatest human beings are born with language. None of us have the ability to walk in a matter of minutes from the time of our birth. We're not even born with the knowledge to know exactly what to do the moment we become hungry or where to go. Where the buffalo, a baby buffalo calf, when it is born knowing and speaking its language. It is born with the ability to know, you know, how to walk in a matter of minutes, and it knows where to go the moment it becomes hungry. It goes to its mother, not the mother coming to it. And so no human being is born with those traits or even with that knowledge or wisdom. And so our language comes from the animals. And so the animals, what we consider the animal kingdom today, they're the original people. They're the original children of God, I'll say that, mm-hmm. You know, because it's a proven fact. Because if we were children of God, then why aren't we born just like they are?
No.
You know, I mean, we're realist. As the people, we're realist. And what that means is that we believe in witness. Okay, you tell me something good, prove it to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I can't believe in something that's not proven to me. And so in all understanding the ribs, you have the Lakota, Nakota, Dakota. Okay? There's nothing that really separates us. It's just the dialect of the language. Like how we say thank you in Lakota, we say pilamia. The Nakota say pinamia, Dakota say pidamia. They use the da, na, and la. And so that's the only thing that really is different. But other than that, our lifestyles are still the same. And also, too, some of our bands, our families camped along the rivers. Some of them camped out in open prairies. Some of them camped along the foothills of the mountains. And so we were nonetheless still abiding by the natural laws of life.
Maybe everyone else understand the word kota. Could you kind of help me to understand why that is a negative connotation for the for Indians?
The negative connotation for or what?
Well, you made mention about Dakotas.
Okay.
And why you got away from calling yourself Dakotas.
No, we used the term Lakota.
Okay.
We would call ourselves, we will address ourselves today as Lakota people.
Okay.
And Lakota, when you hear people talk about Lakota way of life,
okay,
it's really basically a friendly way of life.
Okay.
We are the Tetuan. The Tetuan people, meaning that we, you know, kind of along the foothills of the mountains.
Okay.
You know, in that region. And so we, the people, we, again, the only thing that's derogatory is the word Sioux.
Okay.
That's a French word. It means poisonous snake in the grass. And Native American.
Yeah, you know, I knew I couldn't wrap my mind around it at first when you said that, so I know that someone in the listening audience, mm-hmm, possibly didn't quite understand it either.
Oh, no, that's good.
And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it back up. You're doing, you talked about some great stuff that, you know, with the information that you have about your own culture.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you spreading that?
Well, we're spreading it through, we have every third Wednesday at the Kansas City Indian Center, we have what we call traditional teachings. And it's open to the public. It's free. It's a free course. And so this class, what we do in that class is we help bring forth the understanding of spirituality.
Hmm.
You know, regardless of how anyone prays, it don't matter. You know, I'm not the judger of life. I was created to be the lover of life.
Hmm.
And so however someone believes or prays, they can come and participate and not only gain an understanding of who we are as Indian people, but maybe what they learn they can also implement into their own way of life.
Mm. As a autonomous society, the Lakota does, you also have a different way of crime and punishment, or just saying, maybe you don't refer to it as crime, but, you know, in a way where a child would get in trouble or a juvenile or even an adult, because, you know, we see different things. Recently there was I think it was Al Gore's network that he had done a series on rape on the reservation, with alcoholism being just kind of out of control. What they don't really address, what he didn't address, is how you would address the issues of crime and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you say if a child is on the wrong track or a juvenile? How is that?
Yes, can I take a short little step back and address the term crime?
Yes.
Okay, crime never existed in this continent until after 1492.
Mm-hmm.
We never had no locks, no jails. We never had no keys because we didn't have to lock anything up. You know, everyone was trusting. And so crime was taught to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And now jumping back into the question that you just asked about rape on a reservation. Okay, most of those predators that had raped our women were non-native people.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why people could continuously address that matter is for the reasons and facts that our tribal court system could not prosecute a non-native within it. So we have to wait for an outside entity or outside jurisdiction to come, or officer to come and pick up whether it's a Caucasian man or African descent man, and remove them, and then the state will handle it.
So on the reservation, you have it would be like the police, similar to a police or security force.
Yeah, we have a tribal police officers. We have two branches of law enforcement. We have tribal law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
and then we have the BIA.
Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Yep, Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Right, which sounds pretty bureaucracy.
Right, it is.
There's nothing done.
It is.
That's kind of what it sounds like.
The BIA was formed because in the United States government believes that we don't have the intelligence or we are incapable to handle our own affairs. So that's the reason why the BIA was formed.
So you work within them, within tribal law, and then, of course, you have to work with them to dispense justice for mm-hmm. those who aren't part of the reservation.
Well, if they're not part of the reservation, so, I mean, if I went and committed a crime on a different reservation, you know, I can be prosecuted as a tribal enrolled member.
Mm-hmm.
But most tribes try not to handle people not of their enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could be removed from the reservation. Where back in the old days, again, we didn't have no crime, so we didn't have to worry about how we were going to deal with people when they committed a crime. I mean, if they did do something wrong.
Or breaking the natural law.
Yeah.
Just something that...
Okay, if someone broke the natural law, then... You don't deserve to live.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that something that would then be like a council? Is there elders that are in position that would be, you know, where it would be discussed then?
Well, we are matriarchal people,
mm-hmm.
meaning that the females ran everything.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the female are born with the ultimate gift, and that's the ability to give life. Us men are not born with that. And so the women already have a greater understanding of love and compassion than we do as common men. And so even the great Crazy Horse and the great Sitting Bull would go and meet with the Council of Women. And those women would determine how something should be handled. And now today, whereas today we go by the standards and the guidelines of the United States government. You know, I mean, okay, they call us American Indian people. They call us Native Americans. I don't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not considered an American yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because double jeopardy does not apply to us. I mean, if I committed a crime, a prime example is Douglas White, a great holy man for our people. In 1992 went to tribal court, and there was no hard court evidence, there was no proof, and so they dismissed the court case.
Mm-hmm.
But the feds, the state got a hold of it and turned it to the feds. And so the feds went ahead and they pursued a prosecution. And so in 1993, see, double jeopardy doesn't apply to me. It applies to all American people, but it does not apply to us as Indian people.
Mm-hmm.
So we could be charged. We could be taken to court for the same crime twice, more than once.
So in other words, do you have a setup like judges and attorneys and prosecutors and things like that?
Yeah, we have a tribal judge that is elected in by the people, and we also have a tribal council lawyer that's elected in by people. And some lawyers are hired in as well.
What about prosecutors?
Prosecutors, that's where the lawyers come in. I mean, you know, the judge determines, you know, whether that individual is guilty or not guilty.
You mentioned about the Indian Center. What are some of the other things that you guys do at the Indian Center?
Well, at the Kansas City Indian Center, we have several different programs. We have, if the budget is there, we help families with heating and electric, or water and electric. And also we have a food pantry. And then we have an outpatient, which is our leading program, is our outpatient Morningstar program, which is alcohol and substance abuse. And due to that program, that's what's keeping us above water.
Is that a myth when I hear about Indians having
genetically predisposed?
Yeah, an alcohol, really deep, heavy alcohol problem. Are you experiencing that at the Indian Center?
I think all people have alcohol.
Yeah, problems. That's true. I know
it
that.
It doesn't pertain to any just one race.
The reason why I said that is because it's always mentioned that mm-hmm. when Indians become alcoholics, it's worse. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether or not it's in their genes or what.
No, I think if you look at chronic alcoholics, and if you look at the population of people, just because someone can afford to go out and buy their drinks and still have a home, that does not mean that they're not an alcoholic.
That's true.
You know, that's true. And so unfortunately for us as Indian people, we're the smallest population of people within our own homelands. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we do have a problem with alcoholism. But let me tell you where alcoholism came from. When the invaders came and start implementing, they were missionary workers, they were the first invaders to our people. And when they were telling us that we cannot be what we're created to be, while a lot of our people didn't want to be like them, and if they couldn't be what they were created to be, they just decided, okay, I'm going to go ahead and drink. But the government sent alcohol to the reservations.
Hmm.
The government was the one that started bringing alcohol to the reservations and was giving it to the people.
The Not people unlike didn't know the cocaine epidemic.
Oh, yeah. And government. They didn't know what they were mm-hmm. consuming. You know, when you're hungry and thirsty, because now you're confined, you're going to take, if I locked you in the cell and whatever I gave you, you're going to eat it when you become hungry enough.
So when they lock them up, that's what they would hand them?
That's what our reservations are. They're just all prison camps. They're still recorded as prison camps today. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're given a tribal enrollment number, and that's a sugar-coated term for a prison number. We're born prisoners of war within our own homeland.
So if anyone was interested in coming and listening to you, because you're very knowledgeable about your culture,
mm-hmm.
and do you have any speaking times that you...
We're open Monday through Fridays, 8:30 to 4:30.
Okay.
And they're more than welcome to come at any time. And also, too, every first Wednesday of each month, we have what we call Culture Night. And we do a lot of educating there. But let me help people to understand this. I'm not here to make anyone feel guilty, because mm-hmm. I can't go back and change the past, nor can mm-hmm. you. We can't even change an hour ago.
That's right.
So... I have that understanding and that common knowledge, but what are we going to do together as the people
now
to make a better tomorrow for every nationality, for every race, to help the existence of God's language? I'll say God's language, because God is the one that implemented language from the very beginning of time.
Besides Jaws of Justice here on the radio, what other platforms have you been on to inform people about culture and making people aware, you know, because sometimes people are not aware of the various things mm-hmm. that, and especially as it relates to cultures.
Mm-hmm. Every moment, every it don't matter if I'm standing in line in a grocery store or if I'm sitting on a movie set. It don't matter. You know, every individual that I meet is an opportunity to share a knowledge that is much needed for all people.
So the platform is large.
Yep.
So we bring it back around to where you were talking about matriarchal society. And
mm-hmm.
first of all, I mean, we're going to like to talk about the double jeopardy or referring to people, because I'm being a white female. I'll be in this uncomfortable situation. Well, I know not to call a black man a nigger. And but now you tell me, you say to me that Native American is not quite the correct term. So what would be the respectful way to address a person who is an indigenous?
Preferably indigenous.
Hello, indigenous
American. And or Indian.
Honestly, to know. To get that out of the way where it's comfortable for everyone.
Well, because Indian, I'm going to tell you, everyone thinks that the term Indian came because Christopher Columbus thought he was in India. India wasn't even known as India in 1492. It was a Hindu country, so it was known as Hindustan. So the term Indian is a spin-off from the Spanish word Indios. Mm-hmm. And if you truly translate Indios into English, it means in God. Because when Christopher Columbus went back and he was telling the king and queen of Spain that, hey, there are people that live there. Are they like us? He said, no. Well, who are they? They're Indios. They're so spiritual.
So it would be more appropriate to refer to people that instead of Native American culture with Indios.
Yeah, that would probably be the
more
best
respectful.
Way. You know, it would be more respectful.
Yeah, well, great.
I think it's so necessary for us to be aware of the various cultures, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to do at the Penny Mill Foundation, and that's to make people more aware of the differences and how important it is that...
Well, too, Melvin, the thing is, we're not aware of the differences, but the similarities. We think that we're separate. We are not.
Yeah, well, I think the point that I'm making is the fact that a lot of people, what you just said, that they were unaware of that. And so when we get a platform where we can hear what's going on in another culture, we can learn to appreciate it a little bit more, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, we undermine the term diversity. You know, we have belittled that. That's such a powerful word, but we belittle it no different than we belittle the word love. I mean, you know, I couldn't talk about African slaves. I couldn't because I have no connection to that, no relation to that. But, you know, somewhere in this country, there are African descent people that can tell me about that. So I'm going to go to those. If I really want to have that understanding, I'm going to go to them. The same thing when it comes to the Indian people. We have a way of life. We have a traditional way of life that still exists today, but everyone wants to buy a book and read a book and think that they know something about us. They want to watch Dances with Wolves and think that they know something about us. But what they come to learn is not even close, remotely, not even a quarter of knowledge that is available if they just come see us as the living, we are a living history, as we all are. You know, we're all a living history.
That's why it's so necessary for you to do what you're doing now. And because maybe it might not be everybody would be listening to this show, but the ones that are listening are really getting some information that maybe that they didn't quite understand at first. And I think that that's what it is, because of the fact that we're like a mosaic puzzle, and each one of us have a little chip, and we make up an entire picture, and that's what makes our society, our community so unique. And so I think it's, you know, awesome to learn different cultures such as Hindu, Indians, whatever the case may be, Black American and the history of that, and Anglo-Saxons, you know. And I think that people need to start listening and start hearing not only the differences, but to appreciate it.
You know, you're a man of God. And so correct me if I'm wrong. God stated that when you go to the land, whichever land it is that you go to, learn the land. Am I right or am I wrong?
That's right.
Okay, so what does it mean to learn the land? It means to learn the instructions that are handed to that area, the language that has been given to that area, so on and so forth. What is known about the Indian people today? Nothing, really. You know, nothing is really known about us as Indian people. We talked about the matriarchal understanding. We talked about who we are as human beings. You know, I mean, our records, unlike every American, our records are kept in the Department of Interior, where they keep the species of the plants and the animals. That's fine. That's fine, because those are my relatives.
And then in the tradition of storytelling, much history is kept through the passing on of stories.
Yeah, we have an oral history, you know, and man, I really struggle with that term, storyteller. What I speak about is truth. It's not something, you know, that is made up. It's reality.
Right.
Remember that you're in tune to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. In the studio with me is Jesse and myself, your host, Melvin Merritt. And with us as our guest is Mr. Moses Bring Penny.
Take that break then?
We can take that break.
And now the calendar for July 28th, 2014. The Center for Conflict Resolution will be holding conflict resolution training for parolees in Jackson County. This training will be offered at three different locations around the metro area, and each one of these trainings will cover the same information. The three locations include Ivanhoe Neighborhood Center, classes starting August 7th, Hillcrest Community Center, starting August 14th, and Maywood Baptist Church, starting September 5th and 6th. To register for the training, or if you want more information, contact Greg Winship, Training Coordinator, phone 816-461-8255, email gwinship.ccr@gmail.com. The Kansas City Chapter of Missouri Association for Social Welfare's First Friday Forum will be Friday, August 1st, 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Westport Flea Market, 817 Westport Road, Kansas City, Missouri. This month's guests are Georgia Walker, Executive Director, Journey to New Life, Ron Smith, Director, Second Chance Program of KC Crime Commission, and Deborah Neal, Mentor Coordinator, Second Chance Program. With the help of their speakers, they will identify current barriers, share information on available resources, and explore how to collaborate further to support new life after prison. My name is Keith Brown-Eal. These events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org.
On the Jaws of Justice, 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Jessica Thomas in the studio. Moses Springs Plenty and Melvin. Hey, Melvin.
Good morning. You're still in tune with Jaws of Justice, and in the studio with us, Mr. Moses Spring Plenty. And he was sharing with us about his culture. He has a lot of information. And we were talking about, and you have an opportunity, listeners, that you can call in and ask Mr. Moses Brain Plenty. But before we do that, I would like to ask, you know, a little information in terms of your website, your telephone number, if someone wanted to, was interested in getting in touch with you after the show.
Yeah, they can just go ahead and Google Heart of American Indian Center, Kansas City, and they will be able to find all of our information. And our office number is 816-421-7608.
Say that one more time in case they was getting a pencil.
816-421-7608.
Jesse was asking the question about...
Jessica
was asking the question about the prison system in the jails, and I think it was another question that she alluded to, and you remember the question that she was...
Yeah, let's say today if someone gets in trouble... A lot of the times our crimes, our punishment is handed to us through, we go through the federal court system. A lot of our largest growing reservations today are federal prisons because we are born wards to the United States of America. And so if I'm going to share an example. In Sioux Falls, South Dakota, an individual was helping an acquaintance do some yard work, and he went ahead and took the gentleman's weed eater, which was about a $180 weed eater, or maybe even less than that. And so the guy went ahead and got upset and mad, who was a non-native, and he called the local law enforcement. And so law enforcement was looking for him. So he called his buddy and said, "Hey, I called the cops on you. Better return my weed eater." So his friend went ahead and took it back. This Indian guy went and took back the weed eater. But he told the police, the law enforcement, "I don't want to press charges." He brought back my weed eater, but the state went ahead and pursued a prosecution of the gentleman, and now he's doing prison time. because of this $180 weed eater that he took and he returned back to the gentleman. Okay, you know, I get the understanding that you shouldn't take something without knowing, but I don't even know if the gentleman knew or not. But the point is that when it comes to an Indian being prosecuted, I mean, I hear Snoop Dogg always talk about the African man being getting injustice served to him. Well, talk about us as Indian people. We get it worse. You know, we get federal time because whenever you put an Indian in prison, that prison that is now individually owned is going to receive federal funding because he's being kept in prison.
So that's the motive,
instead of killing the Indian, let's go ahead and like Russell Mean said, we're always going to remain a commodity as long as the empire stands.
It's actually for everyone now. Each one of us that receives a Social Security number, and if you notice on any forms, our names are listed in capital letters, all capital letters. We're all a corporation, each person. Now, none of us, I don't believe, are really very aware of how little of ourselves we own, that our government considers us property. It's just like daily our civil liberties and rights are being eroded. But, you know, the thing is, we put too, and this is maybe a personal opinion, but really, honestly, we put too much stock in what commercialism or capitalism and things and items, and we say we're separate. And what's the differences between us? And what people fail to realize is that we are all one. We are all roots connected, and one without the other, we couldn't exist. Now, someone might say or think that we could, but we can't exist without each other. And we've gotten so far away from the mother being the earth, our source of all life. And our roots have been pulled from. And it's like the more that we're taken away from the mother, the earth, that now we're lost. And we depend on this capitalism and commercialism and the government and are not self-sufficient anymore. We've gotten so far away.
And I wish we had.
Society of
Indios.
In the society of Indios, there's much more value placed on the earth and the mother in whole. And I know through your stories or oral history that you're able to carry on that tradition that keeps us and reminds us of where we came from and where we're going to through a long tradition of oral history.
Well, we're all tribal people. And it's a proven fact. We all come from a tribe somewhere in the world. Our ancestors were tribal people that abide by the natural laws, which helped them to coexist with all of the original creation, which in turn was very safe for the environment. It was when this so-called civilization that began to occur is when things began to be destroyed. The waters became full of disease and so on and so forth. And so you think about it, when we as the people, we have to come back to the realities of life. Again, we're all in this same planet together. One of my sisters said, you know, stated to me, I don't see why we can't get along. We all share the same bubble. You know, we know it's the atmosphere. And so we put so much investment into fear because we're taught that. And we put so much, we invest so much into all of the isms of life. You know, and what when people talk about resources, man, those are our relatives. They're the individuals who help us to live. I mean, because, yeah, if you got rid of one nationality, each and every year that a language goes away and is gone from the human race, now we've lost the connection. That's a connection. That language is still here within those animals and those plants that gave it to those people. But that was our connection, our bridge to God.
I think everything that's been said, especially like what Jessica was talking about, is I wish that a lot of the separatists and were sitting in here listening to this, because otherwise it might be a little enlightening and wouldn't think the way they think in terms of separating themselves, and don't know how important it is for us to connect as a people.
You know, I made a statement once. I asked, when did God die to the people? When did God die and leave common people to be the judges of life? When did God die to allow people to make decisions for all of the rest of life? You know, and really for me, the reason why I asked that question is because, well, Kantaka, God, Allah, Jehovah, whatever we choose to call the creator of all creation, to me, if the creator really actually lived and exists in the minds and the hearts of people, we would be totally living different. And we would be abiding by the natural laws that had been implemented from the very beginning of time. Today, we fear man's laws more than we fear God's laws. I'll just make that statement because, and look at how we live. Look at how we treat each other as common people. You know, we're all human beings. Not one of us, because our skin color is different, but not one of us cannot live without water.
We should let our listeners know that we can open the phone lines to them.
Yeah.
And they can call us at 816-931-5534 to discuss the topics that we've got going on. And you're absolutely right. You know, we cannot live without water or each other or love. You know, that's a primary objective. To me, you know, I don't think there's a pretty broad statement to say that God is dead. I don't believe God is dead. Will always be there. God will be there.
Exactly.
But I lost my spirituality along the way.
God is not dead. But if God's life is dependent on the actions of people and I'm speaking from the perspective of children. If God's life depended on the actions of people, God is dead.
Agreed.
We have to change that.
Exactly.
Because then God's true foundation is what? Is based on what?
Love.
Well, where's it at?
You know? In our hearts and our children.
Just remember, listeners, that you can call in 816-931-5534 and ask Mr. Mose, Bring Plenty, any questions that you would like to ask him as it relates to what we've been talking about. So feel free to give us a call. That's 816-931-5534. And you're at the Indian Center.
Mm-hmm.
And what is your basic job at the Indian Center?
Public relations, spiritualism. I use the ism. I use it because people comprehend and they seem to embrace that for some reason.
Yeah.
But I speak about the traditions, about the preservation of our traditions. You know, not our culture, because culture is ever changing. Now, tradition is something that is still pure, as it were, implemented from the beginning of time. And so that's my main goal.
We do have a caller. And I work our way over there to it.
All right. And so that's what I do there. You know, also to help try to do some fundraising, because we're a nonprofit organization. We're not federally funded. We're not funded by tribes. You know, and so we try to apply for grants that we're eligible for, which there's not many when it comes to traditions, the preservation.
Listener, are you there?
Yes.
Hello. Hi, you're on the air. Could you give us your name and where you're calling from?
I'm calling from UMKC College. My name is Larry.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for joining us.
I wanted to respond. What's your name, young lady? I'm sorry.
I'm Jessica Thomas.
Jessica, you know, we was talking about the laws apply to everybody.
Yes.
I don't quite agree with that, because I'll give you one thing that really bothered me. It was when they had the cocaine law, powder cocaine was the first crack cocaine, but you would get more time for crack cocaine with powder cocaine.
Right.
Cocaine. So those two laws right there to me was not the same, but they should have been the same.
Agreed.
Yeah, so what I'm just saying, that statement you made, kind of like, I just wanted to see did you agree with what I just said?
Well, no, I was just saying when we were talking about alcohol as, you know, it was given to the Indios, and the same as...
No, this guy said he went to prison for selling it, for taking this yard clipper, and he was telling, he was the gentleman was explaining about the different laws. He said, you were saying that it was the same thing for all of us. He was telling you about if the Indians took something, the law would change, was the federal law went, you know, because somehow that our government got more money off of him being in prison. Mm-hmm. And you said that applied to everyone. I just said I never understood how you could come up with that statement. If powder cocaine is less than crack cocaine, how could, that's two different laws like that. Tells me that laws are not balanced out, you know. He was trying to tell you about his story, about his how people treat him and how different other people get can do the same thing and get less time on something. Well, what I was understanding.
Your views, Carla, is well taken, and you have made a point. And
thank you.
And
thank
so we appreciate your call, okay? One of the other things, Mo, that we were talking about.
The number, again, is 931-5534 if you'd like to make a call.
And one of the other things that I wanted to ask, because you made mention that you are the PR person, and I found out when you mentioned about isms that I looked that word up, and it's a spirit. It means a spirit. Mm-hmm. Same thing as alcoholism. Wine and spirits. And so, you know, I just found it interesting when I saw the word ISM, you know, ism. So, so what are your thoughts about that?
Right. Well, you know, for us as Indian people, the natural law is that our physical body can only maintain or can only carry one spirit, and that's ours. Now, whatever actions that we take, whatever we do will determine what our spirit is, you know, and that's the energy, or that's the stuff that we put out, you know, so to say. And so I believe that we should always come back to the understanding of accountability, you know, even in natural, in the tribal laws. Again, they say we have a tribal law system, but we really don't.
Hi, caller. We've got you on there. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Janet Allen, I'm calling from Shawnee. I was just going to ask Mr. Brings Plenty if he's part of the band, Brings Plenty Band, and if he is, to tell us where they're playing.
Yes, I am, but we don't have anything booked at the moment because we've been real busy with other things, you know. My mind, like I said earlier, is that my main focus right now is the preservation of our traditions, because our language is starting to fade away. Our way of prayer is starting to fade away, and the connection and the understanding of the natural laws is beginning to fade away.
I didn't hear you earlier. I was the language teacher for many, many years, and I understand that it's real important that you do that.
Thank you. Thank you, and keep up the good work. Thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So we're talking about natural, or we're talking about tribal law. I'm going to share a story. I call it a story because I don't know, you know, the resource. I know where it came from. I know who shared it with me is my relatives. But how true it is, I don't know. And it's a story about an individual who was a great arrow maker. And he was sitting there making arrows, and he had all of these shafts sitting there. And his children were running around. They were playing. And one of his children slipped and fell and broke some of those shafts. And so he got upset, and he disciplined his child, okay? And so when that happened, the mother tried to defend the child. See, this is the reason why. I don't know if it's true or not, because it kind of so contemporary. But the child, or the woman, tried to defend the child, the children, and so he got upset with his wife. And so when the people heard about him getting upset with his wife and the children, the other men in the village came, and they took him out in the center amongst the people, and they corrected him there. I mean, that's the only part I could buy true of this whole story, because that's how our people did it. They disciplined with the entirety of the people around. And so I will continue after this caller.
We do have another caller. Caller, could you tell us your name and where you're calling from?
This is Jeremy in North Lawrence, Kansas.
Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. I appreciate this conversation very much. I saw an interview with Russell Means a few years ago called Welcome to the Reservation, where he was describing to the American people that in our so-called post 9/11 world, that this was exactly what the Indian people had experienced in relationship to this civilization and government since 1492 in increasing fashion, bureaucratization, genocide through bureaucratization. And so I was wondering whether there was a concept of a truth warrior, of the idea of like something similar to Gandhi's concept of Satyagraha, the heaviness of truth, and that we might have a chance right now to save our traditions, save our cultures, our evolving cultures, through the fierce spoken truth.
There is an opportunity. That opportunity is today. And what I mean by that, and why I believe there is an opportunity, is because we are still here as the people. And when we as the people can learn to separate ourselves from these ridiculous labels that have been thrown, plastered on us, and come back together as the people, that's when we can make the difference. Because you look at even like Russell Means, when what he was talking about, this caller, when he just talked about the Welcome to the Reservation, Russell Means did make that statement based on the Patriot Act. And so Russell Means represented and stood for the United States Constitution. He stood for the Constitution because we believe in the people. We're not anti-America. We are just tired of a system that's not designed for free people, that's continuously telling us how to act and who to be. I mean, you know, it's no different. I mean, you have a faith and belief in how you pray, as so do I. But that you're not better than I, mm-hmm. nor am I better than you. And I'm not going to judge you. You have your belief. However you conduct your home and your family, that's entirely on you, as it is for me too. How I conduct myself at home and how I control, you know, how I do things at home is on me. And so no one knows until you make that transition in life. Was you right or were you wrong? You know, every human being, regardless of how it is we pray or what we believe in, every single one of us are rolling the dice.
I wanted to ask the caller a question. What is your background, caller?
I am of Jewish and Mexican descent, born and raised in Los Angeles.
I see. It seems like you were very much interested in the Indian culture. Is that true?
I'm beginning to be, especially now that since I've moved here to Kansas, I feel that it's the spirit of the people who lived here is so focused in the land. I feel it more than I did when I was in LA, even though there were Indian people who lived there too. But it felt like the traces of their culture and their traditions had been more erased there. I feel it here, and I'm starting to be beckoned by it.
Can I say something? I'd like to say to you, brother, you're not Mexican, you're Indian too, and you're part of the original inhabitants of this continent, you know. And so, again, when it comes to for us as Indian people, or even as human beings, well, again, we're all tribal. I don't care what part of the world we come from. We have to get back to the original instructions of life, and once we can get back to that, then we're going to be free. Then we're going to be free, you know. But until that moment in time, we will never be free.
That's interesting. Uh-huh. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask, I guess, this morning, sir?
Carl? Well, I just appreciated that about reminding me of my Indian ancestry. And that part of my ancestors are from northern Chihuahua. They're the Tarahumara, and they were known for their work with sheep and for making violins. So, thank you.
Thank you for calling the end, caller.
Thank you, listener.
Remember that if you're still listening and you're listening, you can. We got a chance for one more call in at 816-931-5534. So this is your opportunity to call one call.
You know, we're talking about Indian people, and any minority, any different nationality outside of the Caucasian race is filled with discrimination, especially in the judicial system. You know, it don't matter if a black man commits a crime, an Indian man commits a crime, or a Caucasian man commits a crime. The Caucasian man, majority of the time, dependent on their financial world, it could be let off at a very short prosecution or jail time. you know. But when it comes to other people, even Caucasian people that are not wealthy, they're going to face. They're going to be facing the time as the minorities are. So we're not separate as the people.
And I even heard a story this morning that there was a murder of a young man who was stabbed. It was approximately a year ago. And he was stabbed and murdered, and there's no leads. There's no clues. And the thing is, but they can find and arrest, you know, a simple cannabis user of a plant. They put so much energy and resources into that yet to protect our people. And they I can't read. And from there, Melvin. Anyway, I don't know. Please give the time of the Wednesday. I don't know what the Wednesday night program is. What's the Wednesday night program?
Oh, the Wednesday night program started at 6 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
At 6 p.m. at the Indian Center.
Jeff was listening.
The first Wednesday of each month is Culture Night, and that starts at 6 p.m., and it's a potluck.
Yeah, where's that at again?
It's located on West 39th, and on the corner of West 39th and Pennsylvania.
Oh,
and give us the number to the center.
Okay, 816-421-7608. And Jessica, can I also elaborate on what you were just talking about?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was a Lakota young Indian woman that was murdered here.
Mm-hmm.
And she was brutally beaten, stabbed to death, and there's still no leads, nothing. I mean, there's no one even probably investigating still, you know.
I know, it's it.
And then also, too, there was two Caucasian women. One, they were both missing. There was one that come from a wealthy family. Man, they had billboards. I mean, there were people searching for her. And the other Caucasian gal who come from a middle-class family, there was nothing being done. So, again, that goes to show, and who makes up the majority of the population of people in this country?
Right.
You know, why do we continue to allow one percenters to tell you, determine who's important, who's not important? We're 99% of the population of people in this country. And I'm, again, I'm not trying to.
I know.
You know, I'm not saying nothing bad. I'm just stating a fact that, you know, we are the ones who are supposed to have voting rights and determine which laws are passed or which laws are not passed. But we don't get that opportunity because we're not knowing about it until after it's been passed.
Right. But we do have to let our listeners know because it is time for us to go. 9:53, and that's what the clock says. Time to go. So we're going to do that. And thank you, Moses, for coming and joining us today on Jaws of Justice. There's so much more that we could talk about, including getting to some of the oral history and hearing some of the oral history.
And we'd like to thank all the callers for calling in, and that's what made this show very interesting. And I just want to thank our guest this morning, is Mr. Moses Brain Plenty, and we just hope that you go out and make a great day of this day, and stay in tune to Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following is part of a debate between Judge James P. Gray of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition and Kevin Sobet of Smarter Approaches to Marijuana. This is Judge Gray.
How many of you agree with me? In fact, I'm from California. I am here to tell you that marijuana is the largest cash crop in the state of California. Number two is grapes, by the way, if you care. So it's here. We should have learned this from alcohol prohibition, which was a failed experiment. We cannot get rid of these drugs. They're going to be here one way or the other. Wouldn't you rather have the quality, the purity, the strength, the licensing in the hands of the government regulators as well as honest business people instead of criminals? That's the issue. It's a question of how we're going to deal with these drugs. Now, I'm going to quarrel with the proposition. I do not want to legalize marijuana. Do not. I'm not just quibbling with titles. The shirts on your back are legalized products. They can be purchased in the free market. That's where the price is. There's no age restrictions. There's no advertising restrictions. I want to regulate and control marijuana like alcohol. That is so. It's regulation and control. That's what's going on in Colorado today. They're having some problems. It's speed bumps along the way. They're learning. As you're aware, they had Initiative 64 that passed in November. by a quite a substantial majority of the voters in Colorado, and now they have regulated and controlled marijuana for adults 21 years of age or older. And I say, good. Let me ask you a question. How many of you believe the federal government has all the answers? Never seen any hands yet. How many of you are adults in your states, be it Colorado or whatever else? How many of you believe that you as adults are perfectly able to decide how best to protect and care for the people of your state, and you don't need the federal government to do it? Now, I was the vice presidential candidate with the Libertarian Party in the last election, 2012. Governor Gary Johnson from New Mexico was our presidential candidate, and he would say time and again, if the federal government does not have all the answers, then let's allow each state to decide how best to serve and protect its people. And that will result in some wonderful successes that can be copied, and then, yes, maybe some noteworthy failures that can be avoided. There are some harms with marijuana, and you're going to hear from Kevin Sabet. Don't let him take up our time by talking about how dangerous some of these drugs can be. I will agree with pretty much everything that he says. But I'm also here to tell you that the most dangerous thing connected to marijuana is jail.
More tomorrow. Dean Becker, DrugTruth.net.
Ready? One, two, three. What am I gonna do now? Am I gonna make it? Some way, somehow.
We hope you enjoy today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not KKFI, the Mid-Coast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcasts on Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We thank our engineer, Jessica Thomas, host of Before the Dawn on Sunday morning from 4 to 7 a.m. Our outro music is Better Man from the Plan for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Beauticious Blues with Luscious Lynn, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hogue. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon, and Eco Radio, KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day with the spicy Latin sounds of Sabor Latino and Fiesta music. Okay.